So the title of my presentation today is The Impact of Patient-Provided Communication on Adequacy of Depression Treatment for Women in the United States. First, I want to acknowledge my co-authors, Drs. Ron Gagnon and Whitney Witt from the University of Wisconsin-Madison. And I have no relationships to disclose. Okay. So I'm going to start with a little bit of background. As many of you are aware, depression is a very prevalent illness with about a lifetime prevalence of about 16%. And research has shown that women are twice as likely to experience depression as their male counterparts. And for women, depression is a leading cause of health-related disability and the second leading cause of disease burden. Additionally, research has shown that depression and its associated adverse risk behaviors can negatively impact a woman's physical health. Specifically, women with depression or depressive symptoms are more likely to engage in negative behaviors such as smoking, binge drinking, heavy drinking, and lack of exercise. Additionally, more recent work is showing a link between depression and the risk of developing chronic illnesses such as hypertension and diabetes. So on the depression front, the good news is that we have existing treatments that are effective, being psychotherapy and pharmacotherapy. Unfortunately, despite the existence of these effective treatments, many women are untreated or undertreated for their condition. Moreover, we know that there are disparities in the quality of treatment that women receive. Specifically, some population-based studies have shown that these disparities exist based on race, ethnicity, educational attainment, and geographic location. Now, while these studies have been able to describe some of the disparities that we see, they have been unable to really look at what are some of the possible mechanisms and some of the possibilities for why we're seeing some of these disparities. So when we look at the healthcare literature, some of the potential sources for disparities that have been described include patient preferences, mistrust, provider prejudice or bias, and communication. And the focus of my current work is really on this idea of communication behaviors being a potential source for these disparities. So in non-mental health and mental health care, high-quality communication behaviors in the medical interaction have been associated with improved disease outcomes, patient satisfaction, treatment adherence, and the receipt of guideline-concordant care. But the research has also shown that there are disparities in the quality of communication that patients receive during their interaction with their healthcare providers. The current literature on communication behavior in mental health care suggests that high-quality patient-provided communication is associated with improved outcomes, and that the differences in the quality of communication that people experience can help to explain some of the disparities that we see in the receipt of treatment for depression. But the studies that have contributed to this available research have utilized community-based samples and clinic-based samples, and so that limits our ability to generalize their findings to look at communication behaviors and mental health outcomes on a national setting. Additionally, none of these studies have specifically focused on the relationship between patient-provided communication and the quality of depression treatment among women. So to address these gaps in the literature, the goal of my study was to determine if there was an association between patient-centered communication behaviors and the receipt of treatment for depression among women in the United States. To address this research question, we utilized data from the 2002 to 2008 Medical Expenditure Panel Survey, or the MEPS. The MEPS is a nationally representative sample of civilian, non-institutionalized population within the United States. Our sample consisted of 3,179 adult women with depression who were interviewed about their health in the 2002 to 2008 MEPS, and who had at least one visit to a doctor's office or clinic in the previous 12 months. To identify women with depression, we used the household component portion of the MEPS, and in this portion of the MEPS, respondents were asked to list if they had experienced any health problems, as well as any mental or emotional health conditions, such as feeling sad, blue, or anxious about something. And then truncated three-digit ICD-9 codes were generated from the respondent interviews. And for our study, we identified women who had an ICD-9 code of 296 or 311 as having depression. So talk about our key measures. So our primary key measure was provider communication behaviors. And this information is collected was adopted from four questions that were found in the Consumer Assessment of Healthcare Providers and Systems Surveys, or the CAPS. And these questions asked, in the past 12 months, how often did doctors or other health providers listen carefully to you, explain things in a way that you could understand, show respect for what you had to say, and spend enough time with you? And information was collected from adults age 18 or older who had at least one visit to a doctor's office or clinic in the previous 12 months, not including an emergency room visit. And the responses were rated on a 4-point Likert scale, including never, sometimes, usually, or always. And for our analyses, we did end up combining the never and sometimes groups because of small numbers in the never group. Our other key measures included language spoken. And the respondent's primary language was assessed by a question that asked, what language is spoken most at home? And possible responses were English, Spanish, or other language. And we created a dichotomized variable that compared those women who spoke English to speaking any other language. For adequacy of treatment, we had three mutually exclusive categories, and these categories were based on evidence-based treatment guidelines. Our adequate treatment group included those women who in any 1 year had received at least 4 prescriptions related to depression treatment, or at least 8 outpatient or office-based psychotherapy or counseling visits. Our sometimes group were the women who reported any use of pharmacotherapy or psychotherapy, and then no treatment were those women who reported no pharmacotherapy or psychotherapy use. To determine race ethnicity, the MEPS asks about race and ethnicity from each of the household informants. And for our analyses, we combined, we categorized race ethnicity as Hispanic, white non-Hispanic, black non-Hispanic, or other non-Hispanic. And those who reported multiple races were included in our other non-Hispanic group. And to determine if women had an appropriate usual source of care, we used 2 questions that were included in the survey. The first question was, is there a particular doctor's office, clinic, health center, or other place that you usually go if you are sick or need advice about your health? And if yes, is your provider or does your provider work at a clinic, a hospital, outpatient department, an emergency room at a hospital, or some other type of place? So we classified women as not having an appropriate usual source of care if they responded that they did not have a place that they usually went, or if they responded that they had a place, they said that that place was an emergency room department. So to address missing data in our data set, we use multiple imputation using chained equations in the Stata 12 software. And all of our regression analyses were conducted using the miEstimate command. And this allowed us to adjust the coefficients and standard errors for the variability between the imputations according to the established rules by Rubin. Our statistical approach included using univariate and multivariable multinomial logistic regression models to examine the odds of receiving adequate treatment or some treatment as compared to no treatment while controlling for sociodemographic and health characteristics. So I'm going to move on to our results. And there's a slide that went missing. Sorry about that. I'll just describe the slide that should be here. So this was supposed to be a bar graph looking at basically just descriptions of the frequency of women's responses. And the main message from that is that more than half of the women with depression reported that providers always listened carefully to them, explained things so they could understand, and showed respect for what they had to say. And then about 40% of women reported that providers always spent enough time with them. And if anybody's interested in actually seeing that, I can show that to you afterwards. Sorry about that. But on to the actual meat of the results. So let me take a moment to orient you to this graph. So what you're looking at here is our results from our multivariable multinomial logistic regressions that examine the odds of receiving adequate treatment as compared with no treatment. And so this is an odds ratio scale, and the vertical line represents one, and any of the covariant lines that cross one are not statistically significant. So what you see here is that for the communication behavior of listening, women who reported that their providers always or usually listened to them had an increased likelihood of receiving adequate treatment compared to those women who said that providers sometimes or never listened to them. And in terms of language spoken, we found that women who were non-English speakers had about half the likelihood of receiving adequate treatment compared to their English-speaking counterparts. And in terms of race ethnicity, I think that the key thing we found is that the racial and ethnic disparities that have been well documented in other national population-based studies persisted in our study despite the addition of provider communication behaviors and language into the model. And we did, in our models, we did look at the four communication behaviors separately. So we built four separate models. Additionally, we found that having a usual source of care was associated with an increased likelihood of receiving adequate treatment. So moving on to the explaining behavior, the results for the other covariates remained unchanged in all of the four models. But we did not find a statistically significant relationship between providers explaining behaviors and the receipt of adequate treatment. And the same goes for providers showing respect for what women had to say. We did not see a statistically significant relationship, and we didn't see one for spending enough time either. So to wrap up our key findings, what we found was that the language that the patients spoke and some key quality and the quality of patient-centered communication were associated with depression and treatment status, such that women who reported that their providers always or usually listened carefully to them had an increased likelihood of receiving adequate treatment. And those women who were non-English speakers had about half the likelihood of receiving adequate treatment compared to their English-speaking counterparts. We also found that having a usual source of care does matter for these women. In such a way that it increased their likelihood of receiving adequate treatment. So these findings should be taken in light of some potential limitations for this work. One of our main limitations is that this is a household survey, so it used a self-reported measure of depression. So these findings may not be generalizable to women who have a clinical diagnosis of depression. As well, we actually might be underestimating the unmet need for depression treatment because of some reporting bias that may have been present. Another potential limitation, these data are cross-sectional, so we can't speak to causality. Also, our measure of adequacy of treatment, we don't have any information about what type of treatment these women might have received prior to the survey period, and we also don't know about the length or the quality of their the type of psychotherapy that they received, so we can't speak to the actual quality of the treatment. Our measurement of communication behaviors, so in the MEPS, the way that the question is worded is it asks about providers in general, and so we don't know if the women are actually reporting about the provider that's charged with diagnosing and managing their depression, so we don't really know about that specific relationship, but what this data does provide us is with a global view of how communication within the healthcare system in general can affect the receipt of adequate treatment for these women. I think this work does have some important implications for both clinical practice and policy. In recent years, medical education has done a really great job of improving the amount of communication training that providers in training get. But a lot of times that training is focused on how to ask questions and the type of questions to ask. And really what this work is showing is that there might be a need for training about active listening behaviors for providers. Additionally, our work found that one group that may be at a high risk for not receiving adequate treatment is women who are non-English speakers. So ensuring equal language access may be of extreme importance for that vulnerable population. In terms of policy, I think this work adds to a growing body of literature that's expressing the importance of having a usual source of care. So policies that allow women to have access to high quality and continuous care may be of importance for improving the amount, the quality of their treatment for their depression. And as our healthcare system moves towards this idea of the patient-centered medical home, I think it's important to have continuing conversations about how we can integrate mental health services into those patient-centered medical homes for improved outcomes for our women. Just want to acknowledge my co-authors, the members of my dissertation committee, and my current funding through my postdoc. And I'll take any questions. Not directly. So what the MAPS does is it asks if women have a usual source of care, and you can get it descriptive information to try to create what that usual source of care looks like, whether it be a person, a place, an MD, a PA, an NP. But there's some studies that have shown that that data is actually not that reliable. You could possibly look at charges, like the expenditure. But there really isn't a direct way to tease apart from the communication question who these women are actually engaging with. So that's future work in different data. Yeah.
I'm not a statistician, but I'm curious, could language be an effect modifier in the sense that did you treat that, was that part of the entire equation or was it separate?
So we looked at it as, we included it in the model to look at the independent contribution of language, but that's one of the things that we're looking at is to see if this, if it is an effect modifier, so we're looking at some interaction models in future work. Way in the back there.
I'm curious if you have some thoughts about the impact of the disparity of racial and ethnic disparity that you found and some ideas about the reasons why.
So one of the reasons I approach this work is I actually believe that what happens once that door closes between the patient and the provider, I think that there is something that's happening that is contributing to the disparities. Although we didn't see evidence for that because once we included the communication, we didn't see any estimates for race ethnicity change. But I'm not sold that that's not contributing to it. I think there's, these communication measures they're a good start and they're what we have available in the national data set. But I think there's definitely some room for maybe some qualitative work or some more, some breadth, but we really need some depth in this topic. And so I think there's definitely a lot of work that can be done about trying to tease that apart better.
One of the barriers you always hear about is I don't have time to actively listen. So, were you able to differentiate actual time spent and active listening? Did it take much longer?
So, that's not something that I'm able to look at in this data, but from what I can glean from the literature, it's not so much patients, it's not so much the actual amount of time that they're spent with the provider, it's actually how that time is used. And one of the things that I think might be going on here for these women is that there's a sense of, especially with depression, of feeling like you were heard. And so it's maybe not, you could spend a half hour with a patient, but if that person doesn't come away with this idea that you were actually listening to me, you heard my concerns, and you were able to communicate that to me, you could spend forever in a room with them, and I don't think it's going to change. So I think there's a lot, especially when it comes to mental health, that idea that you actually heard what that person was saying is, I think, more important than how much time you actually spend.
So,
Is there data on whether a translator was used or was it the provider in the
Yeah, not in the mess that I'm aware of, but that is that's something that I'm looking at in my postdoc work now is really this idea of language access and does it matter for women? Because I think mental health visits are a little bit different than physical health visits in terms of having a translator present and just how does that dynamic work and is it a detriment or is it helpful and are there best practices for how to introduce that into the visit so that there's a sense of trust still between the provider and the patient but also between this independent third party that's there. But that's definitely a lot of room for work in that field.
Thank you.
Thank you.